is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back to downtown Las Vegas, our Circus Sportsbook studio. Femi Abebefe, he's hanging out at Cowboy Camp today. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi. We know Femi's having a great time. I made sure he had the khaki shorts, the sunglasses, the hat, the full NFL training camp goers attire there. Michael Lombardi, who's back.
He'll be up in the tower. He'll be up in the tower with Jerry and Steven watching practice. When four-game Femi travels, he's got to be style. I'm sure they got to ask him for a lot of opinions and see what he thinks. So, he should be up there. Certainly, he's got a lot of advice for the boys.
Got to check in. You know what he might be doing? He might just be making hundreds of burner accounts as we speak, because I just pulled up the poll so far at M Lombardi NFL. You have till the end of the show to vote. Here are a poll question of the day: of the three wide receivers, top wide receivers still looking for new deals here, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, and Brandon Ayuk, which one is most important to their team in 2024? 59% CeeDee Lamb in the lead over of Ja'Marr Chase. Brandon Ayuk bringing up the rear, not a surprise considering the pieces around him. So maybe Femi's just downloading burner accounts to make his vote and his voice heard.
Yeah, I think to me, I think Rich Gannon would have voted for CeeDee Lamb too. I would vote for Chase, but I get what everyone's saying. I mean, look, Brandon Cooks is a good player, has a hard time staying healthy, not great with the ball after his catch. Lamb has gotten them out of a lot of trouble. He's been very good. His numbers are very similar to Justin Jefferson. I don't understand what's the holdup here, which to me, it just has to be the fact that Jefferson's new money says 35, his old money says 32, and how do you get around that sticking point? I thought once Jefferson deals got done, I thought that it would have been easier for Lamb. But again, Jerry's got to figure out, what does my team look like when I sign Lamb at this number for the next 3 years, when I re-sign Dak at this number for the next 3 years, and when I sign Parsons at this number for the next 3 years? And then what do I have left with my team? I mean, that's the fundamental question that has to get answered. When we just focus on just one item, we have to sign Lamb and don't picture it all within. It's a little bit like what happened with the Giants. Yeah, go ahead, trade for Brian Burns. But if you would have taken Brian Burns' money and put it into four different players, what does our team look like? Plus, we kept a second-round pick. There's alternatives. There's just not one right answer to every situation, which is what the fans want you to do.
Fans and fans have not exactly shown out in droves so far in Oxford. That's what the Cowboys are trying to figure out right now in training camp. As far as deals that actually have gotten done, let's go to what is on Michael's mind for this Sunday. Talking all things Tyreek Hill after he got the deal. No additional years on that, but now 90 more million added onto that 65 mil guaranteed already on top of what he additionally had to begin with here, Michael. And it's the thought now to go back to 2022. And you think about the trade between Kansas City and Miami. That's on your mind today.
Well, look, they gave up a first-round pick, a second, and a fourth. And then in 23, they gave up a fourth and a sixth. So they gave up five players for one guy. And the Chiefs went on to win two more Super Bowls. So as much as Hill is tremendous as a player, and he tilts the field in the favor of the offense, the Chiefs decided to take that money and do exactly what I just said about spreading it out to other players and building a team that was more conducive to winning. Remember, when they had Hill, in that game against the Patriots in 22, where they lost in overtime, they just couldn't get a stop when they needed one. And they reinvented themselves. They went back and added to their defensive team to fix it. So it's worked out really well for both teams because they've been able to use the picks, but which worked out more for Kansas City because they've won two Super Bowls and they've been able to give the attention to their defense to have a more balanced team. Whereas Miami, very good offensively. We'll see how good they're going to be defensively. And can this offense carry them? I mean, look, for as great as Hill is, and no one's a bigger fan than Hill. I laughed at Pro Football Focus when they had him as the fifth or sixth best receiver 3 years ago. That was a joke. I was making fun of that then. But to me, when you want to put together, this is the difference between having talent and having the most talented team. I think that's really what the Chiefs proved they did.
And you go back to that 22 draft, it also gave Kansas City the opportunity to use all that additional capital to move up. That was the year they traded up, got New England's 21st pick, and Trent McDuffie's been, has been a stalwart of that secondary. That's exactly what we're talking about. Sky Moore was the second-round pick that year that Tyreek Hill. They're not trying to say that, but Kansas City at least got a valuable piece. Even in that same draft, Chiefs ended up trading away their fourth-round pick, part of that Patriots trade, And the Patriots got Jack Jones out of that. You know, he's had a very bright start to his career. It just kind of goes to show, yes, the, you know, the attrition over time and also, too, the roster construction, right? Like, we knew Kansas City was going to have to make hard decisions. Yes, Chiefs fans were like, really? We gave up on Hill. But you sort of were put into that position by the way the cap works, by how hard it is for teams to repeat at the highest level, and the Chiefs have been able to do that.
Right, and they get Kalafatis in the first round in that draft along with McDuffie. So they get two legitimate starters on the defense for a legitimate starter. Now, they haven't really replaced Hill in the offense, but they haven't missed a beat, right? Sky Moore hasn't been a good player for them. You know, they trade for Tony. He's hurt again. Shocking. You know, now they draft Worthy. They sign Hollywood Brown, and they get Rashee Rice in the second round. Maybe he's going to get suspended. Who knows? But to me, this just proves the point for all of us who want to buy into the notion you need to have the great receivers. You need great players, but you need to have a really good defense to go with it.
100%. As far as the New York Giants, mentioned them a little bit earlier and some of their potentially questionable moves from the past. Here was owner John Mara this week at camp, a soundbite that you just can't help but listen to and say, what? Here it was on Daniel Jones this week.
Yeah, listen, I'm still happy we gave him that contract because I thought he played really well for us in 22. Last year he got hurt, and you know, let's be honest, when he was playing, we weren't blocking anybody. So let's give him a chance with a better offensive line with some weapons around him to see what he can do. I was nervous about giving up too much to go and get a quarterback, but I was prepared to let him do that if that's what they wanted to do. We made a decision to stay with Daniel and add a weapon for him. I think that's going to work out for us.
Look, I get it. The offensive line has been atrocious. Nobody's disagreeing with that statement, but to give a guy a chance who's in his sixth year, it kind of makes you go, what are they really doing here with the evaluation in New York?
Well, I mean, the year that he said he had a good year, that he was happy with him, he averaged 6.8 yards per attempt. I mean, they won 9 games. He threw 15 touchdown passes. The guy's only thrown 62 touchdown passes in his five-year career. In the first year of the career, he threw 24. You know, he hasn't really done that. I mean, it's just he hasn't been able to make plays down the field, you know, and I think ultimately that's been the biggest problem for him. I think, you know, the best year that he's talking about, he averaged 200 yards passing per game. And the longer you allow him to kind of involve himself in the offense, I think it becomes problematic. And I there's a real disconnect between me and John Mara in the evaluation of Daniel Jones. I think there's no question about that. I think John sees something that I don't see. I agree with him on the fact that he's not been well protected. There's no question about that. And that they haven't had superior weapons around them. But I think John's been around the league enough to know that, you know, when you play, the quarterback makes the weapons better. I mean, look at Kansas City. You know, I mean, I would not say they have superior weapons around them. I mean, Scanling they didn't even re-sign him. Rice, they drafted in the second round. So we know it's the quarterback. And I think ultimately with Daniel Jones, when the game speeds up and he has to play faster, it becomes a real problem, you know? And he has been hit way too much. There's no question about that. And his eye level has never extended even before he got hit. So there's just a difference in evaluation. And I know he picked him the sixth pick overall. And a lot of what the Giants have done is to try to justify that sixth pick overall over the last 6 years. You cannot say the contract was worthwhile. You just can't say it.
Well, and what one of the last things John Mara had said about that was, let's give him a chance with a better offensive line with some weapons. I'm sorry. Jermaine Illuminor signing Greg Van Roten off the street here to start camp because you know your right tackle Evan Neal is struggling. In what world have the Giants become like even just a mediocre, you know, average league unit offensive line? It's still among the league's worst. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the year you look at the Giants and say, yeah, that's another bottom five offensive line. I just don't see where the optimism comes from when you think about players to protect Jones that just simply do not exist right now.
No, they don't. And you know, okay, so they've signed Runyon. I mean, look, I don't know how that all, but they have half the Raider offensive line. I mean, Van Roten and Illuminor on the right side of that line is the Raider line. Both guys are, you know, were the Raiders good enough? Is John Michael Schmidt, the starting center, going to be good enough? Look, Andrew Thomas is a really good player. but there's a lot to be desired there. Look, there's a complete disconnect for me and the Giants in the sense of how they're building a team, how they've approached it. And now they add Devin Singletary, who's a back who needs clear vision, who needs a clear hole. Are you going to be able to get that? I don't know. You know, who's doing the blocking at the edge? Evan Neal has not been what they hoped he was. I mean, everybody's counting on him to come back so Luminor can go play right guard. I don't see that happening. I think Neal is going to end up on reserve PUP because Neal isn't a good player, even if they had to put him in. And here's the reality of the Giants. If they lose anybody in that offensive line, they're in real trouble. I mean, they're in real trouble. The backups are Matt Nelson, Aaron Stenny, you know, Schlottman, from who they claimed off the waiver wire. I mean, this is not a good backup line either.
And I feel like we don't mean to just continue to, you know, beat the dead horse here. But the reality is a lot different than perception. As much as people will say, well, look, 6.5 is the win total. There's not much expected for the Giants. That's a lot different than, say, where New England's at, 4.5. Some of these other teams at the bottom of the win total list, Michael, like a, you know, like a Carolina, you know, Denver's at 5.5. Giants should, to me, should definitely be in that ilk there. And I don't believe being devalued enough when there is still some sort of hanging on to this optimism that I don't really understand where it is coming from in the first place. I think that's why we're having these conversations right now.
Right. And they haven't improved their team speed on defense. I mean, they want to play a scheme that requires great team speed. And I think if you have Mekhi McFadden on your team, I'm not sure you're going to be fast enough, right, at will linebacker. You know, and I think to me, you know, Thibodeau and Brian Burns, all those guys are going to be able to rush the passer if they can get from in front. But that's the issue, right? The reason the Cowboys were so successful is they played from in front. First half point differential is the key. They were plus 172 in that area. The Giants, if they're going to win above their win total, they're going to be in a lot of close games. They're going to be in a lot of close games, and they're going to have to win those close games in the fourth quarter with Daniel Jones making critical plays.
Yes, they will.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I do not.
I don't.
No doubt. Jonathan Van Tobel, he's up next talking college football win totals.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 FBS teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up today and receive both our college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits. See all of our subscription options at vsin.com/subscribe and pick the plan that works best for you. That is vsin.com/subscribe. Jonathan Van Tobel, one of our key writers as part of the guide, as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi today. As we go out to our progressive guest line, welcome in Jonathan Van Tobel, who's part of the hosting team, VSiN Primetime with Tim Murray. You see him weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Before we get into all your college breakdowns, the reason why Elliot Bowman, our producer, booked you is because you are high on his Indianapolis Colts this year, JVT. So we've talked a lot of AFC South this week here on the show, but what's the case here for the Colts love in 2024?
Oh, and also remember, you know, one of three Colts fans on the roster here at the Vegas Stats and Information Network. So let's make sure we get that out of the way. Now, look, I mean, like Elliot said, when we were talking off the air, it's all about if, right? If Anthony Richardson kind of fixes some of the issues with him, it's so weird. You know, Wes and Matt had me on the other day. It was the same day that I was going back and watching all of Anthony Richardson's dropbacks from last year to just see what some of the problems were. You know, some of the accuracy sailing on passes, it seemed like a lot of the play calls very simplistic, one read, get it out. If you can add some complexity to that while taking advantage of his athleticism, I think there's a really big upside for this Colts team that I think has a pretty decent roster on both sides. So I think that's just what it is. It's just excitement, and as you know, Michael well knows, has been in the front office for a fan base to just have a young quarterback to be excited about. It's the first time in a long time I've headed into a season and just been like, man, I can't wait to watch Colts football to see what we got. So I think that's really just it. It's excitement to have maybe some future. And if he's going to hit and you have a franchise quarterback, there's nothing better than that.
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but there is the Gus Bradley effect that comes into play here. Sure. That, I mean, we all have seen live and in person in Minneapolis when we had this incredible leave under the Jeff Saturday administration and watch it evaporate. You're not worried at all about your man, Jeff. You're not worried about your man, Gus Bradley, and his inability to change and adapt to the best quarterbacks in the league.
Oh, I would say so. I don't think it's perfect, right? And even the position, like the roster on defense, Michael, they're having a competition at free safety, so you don't know what that's going to look like. You've already lost a defensive end to a torn Achilles, so that was supposed to be a position of strength and depth, and now that's already getting tested. And then your corners are overall just pretty young and rangy, and we'll see what they believe. They believe in them by all accounts, but there are some unknowns there. Yeah, I think defense is for sure the one that you are the least excited about, because former UNLV quarterback Shane Steichen and his offense, I think, would be pretty strong, and he's going to be able to get a lot out of whoever's playing quarterback. I think we saw that last year. But I would say absolutely, at the very least, at the top of the list is Bradley and what that defense is going to look like.
An 8.5 win total for the third favorite there in what should be a very, very competitive AFC South with Indianapolis. Let's go college football betting guide. One of the quote-unquote conferences you were tasked, JVT, with breaking down, I think a lot of fans are wondering, like, what are we supposed to expect out of the now carcass of the Pac-12, which is the Pac-2, the Oregon State Wazoo teams? What, you know, best bet there, but what's your quick breakdown on how those teams are going to look in such a weird kind of fugue state this season in college football?
You know, I'm glad you asked, Ben, because I've done a lot of the hits for the college guide. Nobody's asked me about the Pac-2, even though I had to write it up. And I get it, because nobody really cares. It's just two conferences. And for those who don't remember, they will be playing a Mountain West schedule, but those will not count toward the Mountain West standings. They will not be competing for a Mountain West title. So you see a lot of Mountain West teams on the schedule. They're not part of the conference. It's just part of a deal. I think of the two, the team that fascinates me the most is the Oregon State Beavers. I mean, they don't bring anything back. I mean, you're talking about a program that everybody departed. Jonathan Smith, obviously, like top-tier production. Aiden Childs is over there, too, at Michigan State and East Lansing. There's so few returning starters for this group, and you do wonder what this looks like when you're going over a total rebuild. I mean, overall, he hit the position at the transfer portal at every single position. Running back, Anthony Hankerson, comes in from Colorado. Michigan transfer Darius Clemens is expected to be their top target. They're like last season, they were top 30 offense, 28th in EPA per play. But I don't think you have that much. You're going to have a really steep drop back on defense. This wasn't even a defense that was as effective as their offense, and now everything's gone. Noble Thomas, how about this, is the lone returning player in the secondary for Oregon State. He was their nickel corner, and he graded out poorly in a bunch of different metrics, didn't perform very well. He's like the guy that has the only familiarity left with Bray's defense when you're talking about the continuity. So I think it's actually kind of bleak. I'm surprised that 7.5 is the win total, and I'll say this, because their win total is 7.5, Washington State's win total is 7.5. It seems there is some market expectation that two Pac-2 teams are still above the rest of the Mountain West when you look at their schedule, but these teams do have to take on some big boys. You see the Cougars, you got to play Boise State, you got to play Fresno State, even at Wyoming or San Diego State is going to be interesting, because we don't know what Sean Lewis is going to be. Wyoming is going to be a tough out. So I feel like when I look at the Pac-2 and the market expectations, there is this thought that they are still above what the Mountain West is, and that's not something I would agree with when you know what the Mountain West is and what these two teams have coming back.
Yeah, I think this is one of the great lessons of betting that I've learned through you and other people here at the network, is when you focus like you have on the Mountain West and you have the knowledge that you do on one conference, it parlays itself into really making better bets, because you have the information. And oftentimes, as these conferences start to come into play, the book isn't as in tune as you are, and they can miss and re-represent some numbers, where when you're in the Big 12 or the Southeast Conference, those numbers are dead on. They kind of keep track. So I agree with you on the Mountain West. Let's shift to the Big 12, Nebraska. I really think Nebraska will turn it around this year. Over 7.5 wins is one of your plays. Tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska's, I think, got a very favorable schedule, Michael. That's like the big part about this. Five of their first six games are going to be at home. They're all very winnable contests. A big revenge spot against Colorado early on in that season. You have to take on Purdue and Rutgers and Indiana as part of it. Purdue and Indiana are both the road games there. But I think when you look at what this team could be by the time you get to October 26th, there is a realistic path for Nebraska to be sitting on one loss, maybe none, by the time you take on Ohio State on the road. I think they can really build some wins, and a lot of it has to do with the quarterback position. QB was a nightmare for them last year. The turnovers, the lack of dynamic play. Dylan Raiola should just be able to give you, even if he's not Patrick Mahomes as much as he wants to be, he should give you a baseline of production that's just average, that should let you and your front seven, which should be amongst the best in the country. They were last year. They're big. They're old. They should be stout against the run. That you should allow this defense to do what it wants to do. So I think overall, Nebraska's got a really strong season in front of them. They take care of business in the early portion of the schedule. They roll into the back half, which is a little bit more challenging. And even then, there are some spots you can take on, I think. You know, UCLA, USC, Wisconsin, those are still winnable games for this squad. I think they are a candidate to go over their win total. And by extension, if I'm right about taking advantage of a lesser schedule at the front end, I'll take the starting quarterback in Nebraska at 501 to win the Heisman if they're going to be able to build up a strong lead, and Raiola is going to be exactly what we expect them to. So I also put a small bet on Raiola at 501 to win the Heisman.
There we go. Not the most daunting Big Ten schedule we've ever seen. And
no.
Clearly, if you're dressing exactly like Patrick Mahomes, that has to, you know, that has to give you some like knowledge with the voters. They at least know who you are going in. As Jonathan Von Tobel is with us here on our Progressive Guest Line, at MeJVT is where you follow him. And one other win total we'll talk about here, JVT. This is not in any of the conference write-ups you had, but we go to the SEC, where a lot of fascination about what Mike Elko will look like and bring to an A&M team that's been desperate for some just positive coaching in general. Forget about recruiting with Jimbo Fisher, but they need some actual results on the field when it comes to tight games. What do you expect for Elko and your number one there down in College Station?
Yeah, let's start with Elko first. I mean, he's a phenomenal defensive coach, and I think he's going to get a ton out of this team. Look, this is a top 25 team by many different metrics. EPA overall allowed to opponents. They were a top 25 team. They bring 9 guys back. Elko should be able to work wonders with this Texas A&M defense. And then you look at their schedule, guys, and you realize, like, okay, like, all right, when do they play Georgia? Oh, wait, no, they're not on there. Okay, when do they play Alabama? Oh, wait, no, they're not on there. Okay, well, at least when do they play Ole Miss? Oh, wait, they're not on there. It's a schedule that is really beneficial for Texas A&M, and that's always a big part of these win totals, right, is analyzing the schedules. Do you avoid the big boys? What are your road games like? And I like this team a lot. They're going to be live in the last game against Texas because they get them at home here. The other big part, and this is the if, right, because as we talked about, it's if season. It's if Connor Wegman's going to be healthy, because the talent is there. The kid, I think, can be very good, but we've seen him miss time. If he's going to stick around, this is a team that overall has 18 guys coming back, has a phenomenal defensive coach, bringing back a ton of production from a phenomenal defense, and a schedule that really works out well for them. That's why I landed on Texas A&M. I think all of those things coming together leads to the Aggies having a really, really strong season next year.
Tell us why you bet Rocco Beck to win the Heisman.
Yeah, 1,000 to 1. You got to have some good ones right out there. But look, Michael, I think with Iowa State, this is a team that I think is going to compete in the Big 12. They're 10 to 1 thereabouts to win the thing. I think that's a bet worth making. But you look at, again, the way a schedule breaks down for a team like Iowa State. The big one is right at the start where you get Iowa, who's going to be breaking in a new offense. So we'll see how that works. But then after that, the schedule really opens up for you. You don't play the two big boys in the conference, Utah, Kansas State, till the end of the year. But the big part is the continuity. He gets Rocco Beck, his entire offensive line back. He gets his top two receivers back. He gets a leading rusher back. He gets a defense behind him that has 8 guys coming back from a starting perspective that, again, ranked really well. I think all of those things coming together, and his performance last year, you know, by many different metrics, was top 5 in the conference and even higher in a lot of different statistics. I think Rocco Beck has a really strong season ahead of him, and he's young, right? It's not like I'm looking at a senior going into like a 5th senior year or whatever to make a jump. No, I'm looking for a young guy to make a really strong step forward with an offense that has a ton of continuity around it and a schedule that works. So Rocco Beck, 1,000 to 1 to win the Heisman.
Look at JVT and I in lockstep. We were the only two, Michael, who selected Iowa State to win the Big 12 in our College Football Guide.
That's right.
Let's ride. Go Clones this year, 2024. Always good to have Jonathan Von Tobel with us here on Lombardi Line. Great to see you, man. Appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Beeson Primetime, 6 to 9 Eastern weekdays with JVT and Tim Murray. We'll continue the college football talk. Wes Reynolds up next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Into our final half hour on this Sunday morning edition of the Lombardi Line. Back from downtown Las Vegas, I'm Ben in for Femi with Michael Lombardi. We're excited to continue talking some college football. Maction is on the docket here in the final half hour. I know that it gets you excited. We're pumped to talk a little Maction and some Big Ten. Actually, yeah, I have a couple win totals in Maction this year. As we go out to our Progressive guest line, get Wes Reynolds' thoughts on the state of those two leagues. As we welcome in Wes from VSiN tonight, you see him weekdays with Matt Eumanns here on the network. Really, really good show worth tuning into for all of their breakdowns, whether it's NFL, college football, especially this time of year. Wes, you wrote up the Mac for the College Football Betting Guide. You also are a Big Ten guy. You've got lots of thoughts there. So let's start with old Indiana back in your home state there with a lot of moving pieces and a new head coach, a whole lot of new there in Bloomington heading into 2024 there with a 5.5 win total.
Yeah, and very much a transition. Kurt Cignetti comes in from James Madison, where he obviously transitioned that program from FCS. They were the runner-up 1 year and transitioned him to the Sun Belt, won 11 games last year. So, you know, when he came in at the press conference, he goes, "I win, Google me." And he has pretty much everywhere he's been. He was part of Nick Saban's staff several years ago. So this is a guy that has been a proven winner at every level. Big Ten has obviously a different breed altogether. But I actually like what he has coming in. He brings in continuity. He brings in a lot of staff and that he had with James Madison. He had a couple of his coordinators come with him. Brings in, I believe, 13 transfers, and these guys were all contributors as well. So I know it's a step up in class in terms of competition, but I think they have more continuity than your average program with the transfer portal, where you're kind of plugging and playing guys from all different kind of places. But to have guys that were part of a winning culture together coming to a new program, I think that speaks volumes to Cignetti and his staff. And the schedule, if you look pretty early on, is relatively easy, I think, for Indiana. Look, they could start out 5-0 in September. That means you got to beat UCLA on the road, but all the non-conference games are easy. So this is a team that I think is going to get back to a bowl game. And look, they have an outside shot at, I think, 7 or 8 wins.
Hey, Wes, we know that he's only, Cignetti's only lost 9 games in his career as a head coach, which is fairly remarkable. From Elon to Indiana now, he started out at, and of course, James Madison. So he gets the transfer, Curtis Rourke from Ohio University, to come in, who played in the MAC and was the offensive player of the year last year. How much do you think that will help Indiana when they play the good teams?
Well, yeah, Michael, I think that gives them a lot of continuity. And look, this is a guy that was the quarterback for 2 straight 10-win teams in the MAC, 50 TD passes to just 16 interceptions in 3 seasons. They can run a little bit of RPO with him. So it gives them continuity. And I think the offensive line, showed a little bit of improvement last year. Bob Bostad, who is the longtime offensive line coach at Wisconsin, and they have a lot of those guys back. So you just look at the schedule. The only, for sure losses you could say, okay, for sure they're probably going to lose, are against Michigan and against Ohio State. But all the other games are at home, and all the other teams they're playing are kind of in their own little transition. So, yeah, I think Indiana, there ought to be some optimism in Bloomington. That's very rare because I've been watching that football program my whole life. And, I think that there is some optimism this season. So, Kurt Cignetti, like you mentioned, Michael, he's won everywhere he's been. And he's bringing in a good culture. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't know about this bluster. Well, I like this bluster a little bit because Indiana's always had kind of a loser mentality as a football program. And, we'll just do the best we can. Hell no, he's saying I'm coming in here to win, and I think he's going to win this season.
He is Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds 1. Also check him out on the Long Shots podcast. Kelly Bidlin and Wes Reynolds, along with Matt Brown, do a great job every single week on the Long Shots pod. One other team you've got thoughts on here in the Big Ten, Wes. Let's go to a team who's perennially been in the top 10 or 12. They've never really been able to get over the hump, though, at least in this ilk of Ohio State and Michigan being dominant. And that's Penn State. What should we expect from the Nittany Lions now this year in a make-or-break season for James Franklin?
Yeah, look, I think with the expanded playoff, this is obviously good for clubs like Penn State that are always very good, but never good enough necessarily to be last into that top 4. Well, now they got to just get in the top 12. And, I think maybe they finally got it right here, because one of the things about James Franklin and he's changed a lot of coaches over the years. At some point it's kind of got to fall on him, but this is, I believe, the 6th offensive coordinator that Penn State has had in 11 seasons. And they have Andy Kotelnicki, who comes in, who is a little bit more creative. He was at Kansas previously with Lance Leopold. And this is a guy that, very creative in terms of the play calling. He does a lot of pre-snap motion, does a lot of different type of formations, where it kind of confuses defenses. But at Kansas he had to do that a little bit more, and I think he'll still do it with Penn State, but only with better talent. And this defense also, they bring back 7 starters. The defensive coordinator is actually a very familiar face to Big Ten fans. Tom Allen, the former Indiana University head coach who was let go at the end of the season, he is now the defensive coordinator. He's been a very good defensive coordinator too. I think that this, it's kind of where Tom Allen, quite frankly, should be as a defensive coordinator for a good program. So you bring back your starting quarterback, you bring back Duelar, you bring back your dual running back, including Nicholas Singleton, bring back a top receiver. Actually, you bring in a top receiver, Julian Fleming from Ohio State. So I looked at the schedule, and the schedule really isn't all that daunting for Penn State. And especially if they could steal one at USC, there's a possibility this team's 11-1. And I think at 11-1, they are for sure in the playoff.
You know, let's stay in the Big Ten for a second. I think Jonathan Smith's career at Oregon State, I know he was one game below 500, was remarkable how good he made that program at Oregon State. And last year, Michigan State's offense was slightly better than Iowa, and that's not a compliment. So why are they not getting any love offensively this year to be improved with such a good coach coming in? And don't forget, they have Antonio Gates' son playing wide receiver for him.
Yeah, Michael, and look, I like Jonathan Smith a great deal, and I think he will win at Michigan State. You know, is he going to do that, though, this year? He brings in his top prospect that he had at Oregon State, Aiden Childs, another transfer he gets out of North Dakota who is a four-year starter. So, you know, I don't like to bet against Jonathan Smith necessarily, but they're not going to be favored in a lot of games. They got a couple bye games at home that they should win. They got to play Michigan. They got to play Ohio State. They got to play Oregon. They got to play Iowa, who I do think is at least going to be improved. We know defensively they're always going to be tremendous. Now, they do get Indiana, Purdue, and Rutgers at home, but they got to be able to win those games. So there's a lot of transition in terms of the transfer portal this year. So that's what they were having under Mel Tucker as well, where I think he was relying a little bit too much on the portal. So because of that, that might set Smith back at least for the first season. I think he's going to win up there in East Lansing, but this is not a team, at least for this year, I'm very high on.
With Wes Reynolds joining us on our Progressive Guest Line. All right, how about some Maction here, Wes? Because there's been no league really picked apart more by the transfer portal than the MAC. There's a lot of disagreement, especially in our own guide, of who should be that number one team going into 2024. A lot of different candidates who could potentially win the conference. West, where do you stand, at least on the top of that league now, with Miami, Ohio, Toledo, the top two on the odds board?
Yeah, and they were the championship participants last year, and they're favored to be so. And Miami does get Brett Gabbert back, who is now a 6-year in the program. They won with defense and special teams last year because they had Avion Smith, who was more of like a running quarterback, couldn't really throw the ball effectively down the field. Four of the five on the O-line returned. But I think with Miami, losing Graham Nicholson, who is the Lou Groza Award winner, and they really relied on him. Chuck Martin, you know, a lot of times played for field goals and didn't play for touchdowns because he didn't have the passer there with Gabbert out. The non-conference is tough. You got to go to Northwestern. You got to go to Notre Dame. You get Cincinnati in the Victory Bell game. Miami broke their 16-year losing streak to Cincinnati. So Bearcats are certainly going to want revenge. But I think maybe the dark horse in this league actually could be Northern Illinois, that they could find themselves in the championship game, because this team's arguably the most physical team in the MAC. They've got 30 seniors on this roster, which is now rare in the MAC. Because, like you said, Ben, teams get picked apart in the transfer portal. So Northern Illinois and probably Western Michigan are the two dark horses, but Miami and Toledo are the rightful two favorites.
Good stuff from Wes Reynolds. Follow him at Wes Reynolds 1, VSiN tonight through the week, as well as the Long Shots podcast with the crew of Matt Brown and Kelly Billen. Wes, always good to catch up. Appreciate the time and the breakdowns.
Thank you, Wes.
Michael, I know you love breaking down some action. It is kind of sad, though, for a league that has such a proud history. I mean, look at some of these rosters, and they have just been it's like vultures getting completely picked apart by these Power Four schools.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you play good in the MAC, you're going somewhere else. I mean, don't pack your bags when you go to the MAC. You know, don't stay. You're not stay there for a while.
No question. I have two win total bets I've made in the MAC. We'll talk about there's one to the over, one to the under. We'll talk about the bet I've made to the over when we come back and get some final thoughts from Michael on some injury news around the NFL when we return. Our final segment of the Lombardi Line is next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now at our new look, VSiN.com, whole lot of NFL and college football content. Matt Eumanns scouts the quarterback depth charts in NFL preseason. Matt also has his college football top 25 preseason rankings. And Michael Lombardi, biggest question facing each AFC team right now on the homepage of our website, along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. betting tools and betting guides. Or it's a 40 days out, Michael, from week one of the NFL. Only basically 3 weeks from start of college football. And a big thank you to our guest today, Rich Gannon. Awesome insight on the state of quarterback play around the NFL. Jonathan Von Tobel, Wes Reynolds, each with great actionable info in college football. Elliot Bowman, great job as always, as our producer. Andrew Ingold behind the scenes, our technical director. Shout out to the whole crew here behind the scenes at our Circus Sportsbook studio. And in concert here with the Mac, Michael, it's a conference you very much love breaking down. I've got a couple best bets, so I'm excited to hear your take on some of these bets I have. We'll go with one of them today. We're next on the air Tuesday, so I'll save one for Tuesday, if that's okay with you, Michael. We want to space this
stuff out. Sure. I'd love to hear what you're thinking. Okay.
Sounds good. Bowling Green, that's the team I'm really high on in the MAC this year, a team you can get over 6.5 at plus money. I bet him plus 118. One of three teams in the MAC who actually is in the top 50 in the country as far as returning production. That's very rare in a league that has been picked apart like a carcass as far as the transfer portal goes this year. And you have Bowling Green, a team that tied for the NCAA lead, 28 turnovers forced last year, and they have 7 returning starters on that side of the ball. Jordan Oladokun is a stud ball hawk corner, 4 picks last year. I liked it offensively, which struggled a year ago. They get quarterback Connor Bazelak back from injury. You also have 4 O-line returners of the 5 from last year. Top receiver in tight end Harold Fannin, who's one of the best tight ends in the group of 5 level, 6 touchdowns a year ago. And your top running back, Terrion Stewart, who rushed for over 750 yards and 8 TDs. He is back. Combine that with a pretty simple schedule where of the 4 other top contenders in the MAC, 3 of them, Bowling Green gets to play at home. Only 1, Toledo, they have to go on the road to face. Very manageable non-con home game against Old Dominion, who I'm down on in the Sun Belt. Another home game against an FCS to start the year. Very good situation in a league that, to me, Michael, is really wide open when you consider all the talent that has left. Where Bowling Green, if you're looking at plus money on a team to basically get a game above bowl eligibility at 7-5, totally realistic. And that was my bet on team this year here in the MAC.
Yeah, and I mean, Scott Loeffler, it's interesting because as he entered year 4 of his deal, there was some questions whether he was going to hold on to this job. And last year, having the kind of year that he had and kind of got over the hump, and now with all the returning as he goes into his 6th season, you know, this is kind of his year to really show that he's kind of got it going. And I think ultimately that's going to be key. I think with the returning players, especially without losing guys, you know, with Ohio loses their starting quarterback and everybody else, you keep things together in the MAC with continuity coming off a good year. You got a chance to really move up.
Team that was in the Quick Lane Bowl. They've lost in that bowl game each of the last 2 years against superior competition. You're right. You keep the amount of production they have. The league has clearly taken a step back as far as total talent. And you're telling me you just have to duplicate what Bollinger did a season ago to cash that over, and you're getting plus money. That was my favorite over bet up there in the MAC. So excited to continue our breakdowns here. We'll give out, we'll have a win total every single day here at the end of the show. Next few shows, Michael, when I'm on with you. Final look at our poll results for today. Again, we were talking at the start of the show. Who is the most important to their respective team of the 3 wide receivers? Big name receivers still waiting on a deal here. CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, or Brandon Ayuk. And CeeDee Lamb, we will call it, Michael, with 6 minutes left in our show. 57% of the vote. I don't know how many of those votes were Femi Abebefe making burner accounts, but CeeDee does win the vote. And will that be enough to get old Jared, get a deal done there? Because that's all indications are that you still have a ways to go with all the 3, the triumvirate there of Cowboys waiting their deals to get done.
You know, what's interesting is again, I keep going back. Dallas has just been so reluctant. You know, Jerry made the statement a little while ago about how he knows the cap and where it's going better than anybody. And so you would think because he knows that, he would be more prone to get a deal done before everybody else. But now he's waiting and waiting and waiting. And, you know, he's got a guy that's got 32 career touchdowns. He's got almost 400 career catches entering his 5th year. The guy obviously doesn't want to play on his 5th year. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, he's basically said he's not playing on his 5th year. And you've allowed him to kind of, you say you're not going to fine him for holding out, which is another deterrent. So I don't know how this isn't getting done. I mean, I really don't know how it's getting done, considering he's got 21 touchdowns over the last 2 years. Their offense, even though they lost Kellen Moore, somehow, some way, Dak Prescott had the most significant improvement in his career ever, and their offense was significantly better without the great Kellen Moore. And yet Jerry just seems to not be wanting to dip into that pocketbook and pay. I don't understand what's taken so long on this.
It is very bizarre, yes. And we're sitting here, we talked earlier in the week, on No Way or No Doubt, would even two of the three get signed? And you said, no way. I mean, and as time goes on, I don't see any reason to believe why that would happen. You probably think one at best at this point, at least going into the start of the year there with that poor result. At least, hey, CD and Cowboy fans have something to be happy with as far as the wide receiver position there. Speaking of wide receivers, our last really news piece here of the day, one of the injury portions of camp we didn't get to, Michael. The announcement comes out after we saw DeAndre Hopkins. He had wrapping around his knee. Head coach Brian Callahan there in Tennessee says yesterday after camp that it'll be at least a few weeks. Hopkins will be out several weeks after the knee injury. Missed practice Friday and Saturday. If nothing else, look, this is a guy now well on the back nine of his career. Not a surprise to see Hopkins with the tread on the tires pick up an injury here. But it also leads into what Tennessee is really relying on, which is sort of an aging cast at wide receiver, hoping to bolster Will Levis, give him more targets to throw to. But it's an interesting transition for a team that has been so ground and pound, smash mouth football over the past few years under Mike Vrabel.
With no speed, I mean, they really need Treylon Burks to come through for them. I mean, they have no speed. I know Calvin Ridley's a good player, but nobody's scared to take the top off. Tyler Boyd is a very pedestrian-like receiver. He'll get a lot of catches, won't go over 10 yards a catch. He's a possession receiver, not difficult to cover. And so where are they going to create this explosiveness within their offense? I just don't like their team, because they have nothing but nickel runners in Spears and Pollard. Now, maybe Pollard's going to come back to where he was 2 years ago before the injury. We'll see. It didn't look like that way last year, particularly in the pass receiving game, where he was close to 10 yards a catch 2 years ago, and he went way down to just about 6 yards a catch in 23. And Spears is a good change of pace guy, but I don't know how that's going to hold up in protection. And then when Hassan Haskins is in the game, you know he's running to get the football. So with an offensive line in question and without great speed at receivers, I mean, look, you know, Burks got to come through for him. He's got to be the guy. And so far, you know, they traded A.J. Brown for Burks. That's what they did, Ben. Yep. They traded A.J. Brown for Burks, and that has not proved to be very successful. And you say, well, they got away from the money. No, they gave the money to Hopkins, they gave the money to Ridley, and they gave the money to Boyd. They could have just signed A.J. Brown and kept it and not had to sign three players.
Seems so simple in retrospect. You also could have kept a head coach in Mike Vrabel, who was about the best in the league.
I mean,
it's neither here nor there.
Well, the reason Mike Vrabel's not here is because Mike Vrabel wasn't buying Malik Willis. He wasn't buying Will Levis. He wasn't buying the quarterback. And if the team was going to take on the personality of Rand Carthon, which is what the owner wants to do, she wants to run this have the personality of the team go through the general manager, then Vrabel had to be the guy that they let go, which is remarkable. Like, you know, it's so interesting how people can actually believe you can find a great head coach on any street corner. You can't. I feel bad for Brian Callahan. He walks into a very difficult situation because the pressure is on them to win. And I don't know if this roster is very good to win, especially up front. His dad will make the offensive line better. But when you're a three-receiver team, like, that's all he's ever been when he was with the Cincinnati Bengals. Go back and look at Zach Taylor's career in Cincinnati when he didn't have Joe Burrow. Try to run that offense without Joe Burrow, changing the protection at the line, making the right decisions. It's hard.
It leads into, maybe this is because of D'Amico Ryans, all of his first-year success, Michael, but nobody seems to be talking about just how hard it is and the general learning curve it takes. First-year head coaches, as great as Callahan was as a mind offensively in Cincinnati, this is a big transition. It's great you have your dad, who's one of the best offensive line coaches ever, to help a bad offensive line, but we aren't really, it doesn't seem like we're really baking that into a Tennessee team that clearly will take some time to grow under a young head coach.
Yeah. And I mean, look, it's one thing. I mean, what Bill Callahan did last year with the Browns line going through all those tackles was remarkable. But again, he's going to have a rookie playing left tackle. He's going to have a quarterback who holds the ball too long, who's very inconsistent and doesn't play the game with great rhythm. I mean, one of the things that I think Bill Walsh would not like about Will Levis is his feet are never tied to his arm.
Big year for Tennessee, and we'll find a lot, too, about Will Levis, especially with that offensive line. Now, how much better will it get in 2024? Always great, Michael, doing these shows, flying by 2 hours here on the Lombardi Line.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate you coming in. We'll see you tomorrow. Are you here tomorrow?
I'll be back Tuesday. We'll see you Tuesday and Wednesday here on the Lombardi Line as we wrap up The Handle coming up next here on VSiN.